Hello and welcome back to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today, at last, yet again, is our fantastic sex and family therapist, Rachel Wright, is with
Hi.
Us now. Hello, welcome back. Lots of stuff happening on the show today. I've got in-law in town. She's my mother-in-law's here visiting. Natalie's in there currently. I thought she was going to have her own appointment today. Like, she was going to be busy, and then there was, oh God, there's so much going on. I did the great husband thing where she said, hey, I had this idea. I'm going to go to my doctor's appointment. And then afterwards, I thought I would take my mom out to Malibu and we would go to lunch. What do you think? And I think what a normal person's supposed to say to that, Rachel, is like, yeah, whatever you want to do. But when you ask me what I think and I have thoughts, I say, well, I think it's crazy. But if that's what you want to do, go for it. I don't understand why every time you do something with your mom, it means that you have to ditch the rest of us. But I get it. If that's what she likes to do, then that's totally fine. Because when my family comes, we all hang out. Nobody is really excluded.
Uh-huh.
I'm what they like to call in your line of work a catch, Rachel Gibbs. That's right.
Yeah,
damn it.
I've told you that before.
Yeah, I'm a real, real catch. I'm a peach to live with. So anyway, so now that all changed. Evidently, I have passive aggressively willed my wife into not leaving and going anywhere. I'm sure that's super healthy too. Really winning in this marital front. And so she's making lunch, and we were able to start a little bit early. So she's going to finish her lunch, and she will pop in because of the topics that we have. I think it would be fun to have Mrs. Worsham weighing in.
I agree. I wish I would have known. I would have kept Mr. Wright around.
Oh, forget that guy. Oh, my God. It's just a sandbag with his dreaminess. I'm so
tired. I know. He's so good.
So tired of him just being so calm and just
You know, he turned
handsome.
30 yesterday.
Oh, he's past his shelf life, Rachel. Time to trade him in. Try to ditch him. So you're coming up on a year, right? You're like, what, 7 months into being married? Eight, ten? Ten.
Yeah,
no,
I don't know. Forever?
Is it already? Well, here's the thing. This is the new trend when you are living with someone in sin. Before you get married, it's
totally. Because sins are things I believe in.
Then you It changes the dynamic a little bit. It doesn't seem like it, but it changes significantly.
It changes. It changes everything. People say, if people say it doesn't change, they're lying. Yeah. We were together for 3.5 years or something. I don't know. I'm always the one that's bad at the number game. But we were together for a long time before we got engaged. And then we were together for a long time again before we got married, and things shifted a lot when we got married. Things changed so much. So yeah, it changes.
Well, I mentioned this in our pre-show text, and I don't know if this is in regards to your own marriage, but you said that you were having the worst day and were excited. And I thought it would be good for you to be therapized. You see, you are always giving out the therapying. And I thought, I'll be honest with you, I have not logged 3,000 hours. I have never taken a course. I don't even think I finished a junior college psych 101 class I was taking for my liberal studies degree. I do not think I finished it. So just so you have an idea of what you're dealing with here. But if you want to offload, what makes a Rachel Wright worst day situation?
Well, I'll offload very quickly, but I'll offload. So
why do you feel like you have to offload quickly? Tell me about that. How's my therapizing? I'm doing really good, huh?
Well, see, I'm very aware of your time, Justin. So I value your time and don't want to take it all up on myself.
That's interesting. Why do you see my time as more valuable than yours, Rachel? Tell me about
it. Oh, that was good.
Right?
That was so good.
Oh, I feel like that's worth at least 2,000 hours, what I just pulled out of my ass there.
Like 600.
And the best part is you still haven't even told me why you had the worst day.
I know. No, that was so good.
All right, hit me.
Long story short, so I'm teaching 4 live webinars in the next 3 days, and we've been working on these webinars for like over a year. They've been my heart and soul, and working. I got the norovirus last month, so we had to push them a month later anyway. So now we're here, and I find out this morning that the software that we use for them no longer works.
So when you say software, it means like how you would essentially be broadcasting.
Literally. Like, so how the content, how you can hear it in LA while I'm in Denver.
Oh.
And so Kyle and I woke up to that news this morning. And as some of you know, our first webinar is tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Oh, yeah, that's rough, man.
Now I was learning and purchasing a new software. Got a call from a student loan servicer saying I owed $10,000. No, it was a computer error, but it took 54 minutes on the phone because my name change hadn't gone through. So that's been my day so far, Justin.
Yeah, and this 54 minutes, because here's the thing. Here's where I could definitely empathize with you, Mrs. Wright, in that I have, since my father-in-law passed away, you don't know this because it just came out on an episode last week, but the reason I took a break is Natalie's dad passed away a month ago. Yeah. So, and you know, we've had a month to process, and like I've talked about with other people and some people even weighed in on the chat during that show, is that it comes and goes in waves, yada, yada, yada. So I'm not trying to be dismissive, but no time for backup right now. My time is more valuable than my wife's morning is what I'm really saying there. No. So anyway, I've been dealing with their finances and everything. And you think like just a matter of like taking care of utilities and stuff like that, that when you do it, even for yourself, it's like, oh, no big deal. But then when all of a sudden you got to sit on hold, at least now most places have the callback, which you think is like, oh, what a great thing. But you're still locked in. It's like having a job where they want you to come in the morning for 4 hours and then punch out and not get paid for three in the middle. But you still got to come back. It's like, I know that the Social Security Department could call me at any minute. I have a guest estimation of it in 45 minutes, but what am I going to get done in 45 minutes? You're landlocked. You got nothing that you
can
do.
You can't do anything.
Yeah, you're sitting there drawing. I'm trying to prove to you. And then this is what I love is that you know you don't owe them $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
But you were guilty until proven innocent in finances. So you got to wrestle up all this time and go through all this bullshit just so you could say, yeah, I'm sure they gave you the very satisfying of going, oh, I'm sorry, this was a clerical error. Everything's fine now.
Yes.
Really?
No, that is exactly what I got. And it was hilarious because I said at the end, I said, I hope you use this as a training video as I have done my best to communicate very effectively with you as I have been very frustrated for the last 50 minutes. And that's how the call ended. Thank you, Mrs. Wright, for your time.
Smash cut to the telemarketer who's being the collector in this scenario, just flipping through your file going, what did this bitch study? Oh, psychology. That makes sense.
Exactly.
All comes together.
So, yeah.
Another one of these communication yahoos using words like frustration instead of pissed off. She didn't even call me a bitch.
So all I want to do are teach these webinars and, you know, I pay my bills on time and not get harassed for not doing something I didn't do.
Exactly. And see, what in a real ethical world, what would happen is that when you brought this up, it would just be a situation where you would say, they would go, oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Wright. We have you in the system and we didn't change your name. And there was just confusion. Yep. We thought we received a payment from Mrs. Wright. We did not receive a payment from Rachel Gibbs. And that was the issue.
Exactly.
So good news, because this is Utopia, we are now going to give you $800 back to compensate for your postgraduate time. And that's our bad. You know, because we understand just as well as you would is that if you were 60 days late on a payment, we would bill you an extra $1,500 and there would be interest and fines and fees. And so, therefore, it is only fair that when
that
we screw up,
to you?
Exactly, you get a credit.
Of course.
Not even an in-store credit. You couldn't even go back in and get a secondary degree or continue, or at least it should count for your continuing education. I'm sure you have to do that to maintain your license.
Oh, yeah.
You should be able to have logged 6 hours of continuing education because you were communicating, you were navigating their bullshit. You're always therapizing.
Thank you, Justin.
That's what
I'm here
for.
I appreciate that. I feel better about it.
I'm here to
feel
walk.
Feel better about my morning now. You did a great job therapizing. 3,000 hours or not.
Really, because it kind of sounds sarcastic. I'm not very good at communication.
No, you did. Like, I feel good. I feel like I got to vent.
I'm still picking up on a lot of sarcasm. I'm sure the people listening are hearing the same thing. when you go higher with your voice, I don't know what level. I'm guessing this is a psych 301 or something. But when you go, no, when you do, no, you did. That's not sincerity that comes across.
See, I'm just working on a new song. I'm auditioning for a show, and it's a soprano song. So I'm just, you know,
that's interesting.
Working on my range. That's all.
Why do you feel like you need to use lies to deflect what I'm
not even a lie.
Oh, all right. Well, here's the good news. Good news is I'm sure you're well on your way to navigating the webinar situation, right?
That's... Yes. And we will be having them. It'll just be on a different platform. And I'm going to do my best to learn that platform today. So, yeah.
And you and everything else is everything else beyond this, beyond the bullshit of the collection. And then now the change in the software, and you're going to do these big, big webinars. Everything yeah. else in the land of Rachel Wright is good.
It is now that I'm healthy again. Yeah, I was in the hospital for a little while and had a crazy GI bug called the norovirus. But I would say I'm about 95% back to normal now, which is amazing. And just a new gratitude for life. So I'm super happy that we're recording today. I've been looking forward to this since
this norovirus. I'm curious, is because I feel like I've seen this in the news. Is this more intense than what I'm aware of in this given moment? Is this?
It's bad. Yeah. It was bad. I actually did. It was so bad, Justin, that I did an entire podcast myself on it and my experience with it.
Oh, is that available now? Are those all out?
Yeah, it's out. It's out. It's the Wright Wellness Center podcast, and it's on everything you can find podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all that good stuff.
Excellent. There's a link in the description of this episode right now.
Yeah, and I did a whole episode on my experience because it was so humbling for me as a healer and someone who takes care of other people to be in a position where I could not advocate for myself in any way, shape, or form. And it's terrifying. So I wanted to give listeners a look into the fact that just because I study this does not mean I'm not living it with you. So yeah, that's what the whole episode's about. But yeah, it was a learning experience, and I'm very happy that I had it, the learning experience, not the virus. And, I'm glad that it's over.
I'm glad that we did that. All right. Well then let's do this because I am doing longer shows and I'm trying to work in these commercials at convenient times. So I'm sorry if it breaks everything up and I'm sorry that I overshare everything. I think it takes away from the professionalism that you're supposed to have as a broadcaster, but because I'm an internet celebrity, I don't have to worry about professionalism. But here's the thing. You can support the show by going to thedadpodcast.com, scrolling down to the bottom, and there is a Amazon banner there. When you click on that banner, and bookmark that as your Amazon link. Every time you go back to Amazon and purchase something from there, Daddy gets a little taste. I get anywhere from 5%, sometimes 10%. It costs you nothing, so don't worry about it. I'm not taking it out of your wallet. I'm taking it out of Jeff Bezos, who I think is knocking on Bill Gates' ankles for being the wealthiest man in the world, and he likes it. It's his idea. He says, hey, listen, I'm made of money. It's raining money over here in Bezos land, so let me give a little bit to my friend Justin. So all you got to do, again, bookmark that link and then purchase something. And it doesn't work via the phone app. I know people have sent me that. But you could build a shopping cart in your phone, and then the next time you're at your laptop, you want to do it. But really, it's okay. Do your shopping normally. Just make it a bookmark, and then it's happening, and you don't even know it. It's awesome. Okay, now we are back again with Rachel Wright. And Natalie is here, everybody. Holy balls.
Asshole.
She's here. Hello. Hi, my dear.
So hi, this- Natalie.
Miss Rachel.
This is perfect because sometimes... Oh, I'm sorry. You could tell Rachel how you're doing.
I'm good. Nobody really cares.
That's true.
I do.
She has to, though.
She has to.
Yeah, she's licensed.
No, I do.
Nah, come on. Quit being sarcastic. She gets us with that sarcasm, this one. So this is actually... Normally, I will send some articles in advance to Ms. Rachel or Mrs. Rachel. And this time we have a Rachel Wright request. How did you put this healthy, what was the terms that you used? Can you hit me with those again, Rachel? I'm sorry.
Which ones?
When you sent me the say, hey, anything on this, what was it you said? You said,
I said healthy, connected, intimate communication.
Yes. And so I typed those, fine words into the Google. And they found this. And this is why I'm great that it works out Natalie could be here, because a lot of times when I do these episodes with Rachel, my dear wife, Natalie, you get thrown under the bus a lot.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I thought.
I protect you, though.
Yeah. Thanks, Rachel. Looking out.
She does a horrible job of it. But anyway, I thought it would be fun that you and I could kind of go through this and almost take it like our own personal quiz live. And then also, like she does when it's just me, Rachel can make fun of me for my stupid opinions. So this one comes from, which I think is great. I think this is a part of Men's Health Magazine. It comes from the goodmenproject.com.
So they're doing basically what we want to do, but just for men and not with therapy and courses. But I love what they're doing. Their slogan is the conversation no one else is having. And that's basically what we want to do on our podcast and in our online community. So just for the record, I love this website. So for the men listening out there, highly recommended.
Yeah. And I've come across some articles that I think are super sappy and cheesy, but there are some in there that I'm like, oh, this is interesting. But I'm going to say this for the sake of humor later on, is that I honestly, when I went through this, my wife has not seen this. But I think we crush most of these, if I could be honest.
Nice.
I think, and fair to say going into this, you and I are very happily married, and you could be honest.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very, I talked about this on the last episode without you here. We had a very funny conversation on the way back from your company picnic, Natalie, in that I can't remember how it came up. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking, it was Adam Carolla, and he made an observation about how he's never seen a black person with seasonal allergies or a Hispanic person working on a job site who had allergies. Like, they never complained about, oh, their pollen count or anything like that. And he just, it was something, I don't know why, but he said he said something like they don't have those shortcomings mm-hmm. or whatever, not like Rich Whitey, as he joked. And so I said, well, what do you think my shortcomings are? And I like in these situations that I accidentally put you in is that this is
because you want the honesty. But do you really want to know?
No, I do. I do. But it makes me always feel like the chick in the relationship because I'm, you know, it is a lose-lose situation. And I didn't
realize.
Why
does there have to be a chick in the relationship?
Because in my relationship, there is a man and there is a woman, and I am the woman and my wife is the man. Has that not been made clear yet?
Sure.
You're not going to listen. You are not going to break gender roles, Rachel Wright. I don't care what you're doing over there at that website. But we all have our gender roles. It just so happens that mine happens to be feminine and hers happens to be very masculine.
So then where did that go?
Later date, I think.
Oh,
this
we are?
Would be a good follow-up discussion.
There's another podcast day.
Yeah. Well, we could get into it now.
No, you're shiny squirrel. Go. Finish what you were saying.
So my point is, I said, what is my shortcoming? Mm-hmm. And it took you a while to find it. And I love your answer, though. I have become such a, it is so hilarious. And this little moment, the reason I take us off track onto this anecdote is because it perfectly resembles, I think, who I am. It opened my eyes to who I am as a person. Because the reason I asked you the question is because in a lot of ways, I'm obsessed with this self-improvement concept. Like if I find a weakness or a chink in the armor, nah, I don't think you have to tell the people if I'm being wrong on this, Natalie, is that I come not necessarily from a place of insecurity, but just like trying to get better.
Right.
You know, who doesn't want to get better kind of a thing. And so it took you a while to think, but then tell the people what you said.
I don't know if I can completely remember, but I remember saying your biggest shortcoming is that your inability to let things go.
Yes.
Mm.
I love it.
But here's the thing.
It gets
what
better.
I also said is it's not really a shortcoming. It's actually what makes Justin Justin. And that is his strength, too. Because he can't let something go, because he has high expectations, then those are very good things.
Yes.
But when it's little stuff, like the kids are making a mess in the kitchen, or like, you're going to make a mess. Like, it's little. It can wash. It can clean. Let it go. Not everything is so, like.
Well, you said it's part of your persistence, which I took to being a positive thing. And I said, well, yeah, but a lot of that is a positive thing. I mean, there is some downside that comes with it, but most of it. It is. And you did another hesitation, and you said, yeah. And I go, well, hold on. I said, what would you say is the percentage? Like, and you go, I don't know what you mean.
Oh, God. Justin was like 50-50?
No, I did not say that. Yeah. I said 90-10, 80-20, because I thought it was somewhere in that range.
Yeah, no.
And you go, 60-40. which is like failing. That means that very little of what I of what comes with my inability to let things go rolls out positive in your eyes and your perception of.
No, it's not a matter of. No, it's 60% of the time you don't let things go. Whether or not the outcome is positive is not relevant.
Clarification.
Yeah.
See, you misunderstood my question.
No, because what's hilarious is then like something will happen if a pillow is out of place or something's not where it should be, and Justin looks over and I'm just looking at him like mental breakdown, eye twitch, like neck flinching.
I don't get that many nosebleeds.
That's bothering you, isn't it? And you're like, yes. But then I don't want it to be a thing where if you do let something go, then you're holding that in. I'm going to let that go. All of it's going to build up, and eventually you are going to be like, I can't fucking take it anymore. Pick the toothbrush up, put it in the thing, move this, put that over there, and wipe that down. Like, then you're going to go crazy, which I don't want.
I like that
so
all of the things to you.
It makes you who you are, which is great, and it makes you, you know, yes, it makes you Justin, which I think is a good trait.
I like that all of the things, just to be clear to Rachel and the listeners, it's not all just me and my anal retentive cleanliness. It is in that vein. But here's what it, I'll finish the story so we can get into the content. But then what it translated into is I recently got a note at work, which I think is absolutely fucking asinine. They told me at work,
what
I play
Michelle
all the,
say when you told her what I said,
I play all of the bumper music at the, on the Bill Handel show. And so I pick it. So whatever song we come back from a commercial, I pick. And it recently came out that they said, you know, you're playing too much pop music. And it makes the show sound feminine. So we want you to work in a country song, a pop song, a rock song, and an alternative song in the four breaks in 1 hour.
Which before they didn't give a shit until you got there, which is hilarious.
And so anyway, I was like, oh, yeah, when I got there, the bumpers were 2-3-year-old songs.
Right.
And that was the whole problem. But anyway, my favorite part about this was is that it's just I'm fuming, Rachel. I'm fuming in my head about this stupid, innocuous thing. I'm also not so dumb that I can't see that. You should pick a fucking song. Like, who really cares? Mm-hmm. But I put so much of me, I think, and unnecessarily into everything I do, be it my children, be it my marriage, be it my job. Hell, just being breathing, I guess, that I I couldn't let it go. And then Snap got to me going, what the hell are we doing? Why are we worried about 10 seconds of music I play 4 times an hour? Hour, and 90% of this is for a joke of it, but as I'm using this joke as a way to relieve my anger at this situation, in my head I just have this flash of Natalie in our minivan going, you know, you can't let things go. And like and in my mind I perceived it to mean 60% of it is actually a good time, like where you don't let things go, only 60%. I'm like, fuck, this is a whole 40%. This is what she's talking about. Oh, all right. So anyway, do you have any thoughts on that little moment before we go back into this article,
Rachel?
That's what I'm asking.
Oh,
you. Sorry. I get lost in your eyes and I can't help but make eye contact with you.
Oh,
I'm
that's
madly
precious.
In love with you.
Aww.
I got something in my eye. That's the problem.
I don't think so. I mean, if you wanted to have that be the entire content of the show, then yes. But if not, then no.
Boy, we got issues, dear.
No, we don't. That's not what she's saying. But here's the thing. I want you, this is what I want this honestly to be, and I want these always to be this way moving forward, is that when we go through this stuff, yes, I like to lean on your expertise, but you do this for a living. So as we tell people, which I think I forgot, is that this is for entertainment purposes only. This is not actual therapy. You should see a licensed therapist if you want therapy.
Disclosure.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which is me, just not through the podcast.
Exactly.
I'm not directly treating you right now because I don't know you.
And I want this to be fun for you. So especially if Natalie and I are here and there is a kernel of truth that you could drop on it, but you could say it with a passive-aggressive tone that you could never say as a professional.
Oh, I love that.
Or if you could lean on one of us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll try. I mean, you know I love my humor, but
yes.
I don't think I have passive-aggressive left in me.
Okay, well, humor. I'm just saying, if you want to lean on me
of
or
course.
Tease me, like, I want this to be fun. So if this little nugget of an anecdote that came up from Natalie's and my real marriage you think is far more fun to you to play in that sandbox than it is to go through the stuff we have here, you steer it, and I would be totally fine with it. All right?
Deal.
Okay. So here's what we have. We have these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items. And these are the ingredients, which I know Rachel Wright loves to break things down into ingredients because relationships are all cakes. And that if we just mix these ingredients properly, we will all have a perfect, harmonious relationship.
Oh, and then kumbaya by the campfire later.
Filled with nothing but fulfilled love and constant sex of multiple positions and
lots of conflict.
Yes. Well, no, not really. You won't have conflict if you use these ingredients. I don't think you understand the article.
The back scratching.
Is that what they're telling you? Is that what this says? You read a different article than me, man.
60-40, Rachel. I know what I'm doing.
Let it go. Let it go.
Yes, thank you, Natalie.
Now, here's one. Oh, this is already breaking bad for me. Here's one that I love. Honest conversations. I think you and I crush this. Being able to have honest, open conversations while maintaining eye. This is where they get a little too kumbaya, in my opinion.
So wait. But first, you have to explain. These are what. So the person who wrote this is actually a licensed marriage family therapist. So
correct.
The person who wrote this has the same credentials that I do. It is a recent article. It came out just 3 days ago.
Yep.
So that means that any research that he goes back to is new. These are things I just like to point out because as people are looking for articles, these are the things that can be overlooked, and then that's when we get a lot of misinformation.
Ah, so good point.
The author is important to look at. The date is super important to look at. And then he says the ingredients of a healthy, non-sexual intimate relationship. So he's not saying a relationship that doesn't have sex, but he's saying a relationship where there's also intimacy. And if there's healthy intimacy, then these things would be there.
And I think what he's trying to get at in this is that because this is the Good Men Project, is that if you're a dude, if I'm a guy who wears a visor and can crush a beer on my forehead, I'm like, well, a healthy relationship means I am having sex, bro.
And yeah, so there's and honestly, a lot of people think that.
Yes.
Not even just the bros with the beer crushing foreheads.
I think it a little bit. I mean, I eat a lot.
Can you really crush a beer can on your forehead?
No, but I think that a healthy relationship, there needs to be like a certain amount of sex goings on in that area.
Yeah, no, and most people do.
Yeah.
The issue comes when that's the only form of intimacy.
Right.
And then
when
so
all
that's
you're doing
what this
is banging,
is about.
Then it's a problem.
If I don't
you're
see
just
a problem
banging
with
to
only
bang,
banging.
It's a problem. But
maybe
if you have a relationship and you're talking and you're honest and you enjoy each other's
correct.
Company, then right. the sex will come naturally
I guess what I'm
on
saying,
its own, not just because this is what we do to
I'm
feel
looking,
close.
I'm looking for a 60% banging, 40% eye contact situation.
What is it about the maintaining eye contact during conversations that's too like meh for you?
I don't like contrived. I don't like and it's.
What do you
I,
mean contrived?
It, to me, it seems like if it's the idea, and here's what it
no,
is.
No. The majority of men cannot handle
yes.
confrontation, and then like stuff like this of intimate conversation, they feel uncomfortable or awkward, so they don't make eye contact. So this author is pointing out, listen, as simple as it is, make eye contact. That's
right.
all.
And I think
yeah.
I'm being unfair to people who maybe are missing that thing, but I don't know why, but it is a trigger thing for me where it's like, well, yeah, who the fuck doesn't make eye contact when they're talking
that
to someone?
That insecure guy that doesn't want to feel like he's emasculating himself by having a conversation on something that's bothering him for his female
correct.
Partner.
Correct.
Oh, all right.
Justin, there's, like, there's
getting a little
huge
vagina heavy in here. Okay, guys.
There's a big reason why some people decided to stay with me and increase their sessions when I went 100% remote. And some people were like, oh, no, I can't do that. Some people really enjoy that eye-to-eye, like, stare where you're just really intensely looking at each other when you're talking. And some don't. Some would actually like get more out of the conversation if they're folding laundry while they're talking.
Yeah, and
I know what you're saying. It's not an essential, but eye contact in general, it creates intimacy and it also helps build trust. And it can also tell your partner, like, hey, I'm actually here with you. And as uncomfortable as it is, like, I make couples do it all the time. And I love hearing and watching the giggles because trying to stare at each other for more than 2 minutes is really awkward. But I highly suggest you try to do it. It's fun.
Well, and especially nowadays with like phones and everything and all these distractions externally, like Justin will be on the phone and I'll talk to him. And then I'll have moments where I'm like, are you listening to me? Because like, if I don't see your eyeballs,
No, totally.
You don't know if the message is getting through either.
It's what I learned from Rachel's suggestion of the love languages, where when you took the test, I realized that quality time is yours is physical touch, quality time, and words of affirmation, a three-way tie. And it, when I read about those, that one of the things I noticed was that people who, if it's quality time, they don't like it. It's not the same if you're distracted. Like, I can listen to, and I'll be honest, I've failed in that area of multitasking and listening.
He's had moments. Yeah. To be honest, I was not paying attention. Could you say it again? But I'm like, motherfucker, give me your phone.
60% of the time, I'm listening. 40% I'm not.
Let it go.
So I have failed, but I have made a conscientious effort of that to where I'd be like, oh, I need to remember to not do this. And sometimes I've even told you, I go, listen, I'm here and I'm with you, but I got to do this at the same time. And once I'm done, I'll move on. Yeah, and I want you to know every time we've had lunch and I'm doing anything with my phone, I hate it. And if I didn't have to do it, I would move on. Yeah. But,
and that's why in this article, it's just a reminder. It sounds simple, but people forget the simple things.
Exactly. And he makes a really good point about once the attractiveness dies down, like once that kind of honeymoon sex phase at the very beginning dies down, you want to be able to carry on a conversation with that person. So it's kind of like, I loved watching The Bachelorette, but so many of those scenes are cut and edited. You're like, did you actually have a conversation? You just got engaged and all you know about that person is they're from Dallas and her favorite color is blue. You know, so it's just getting deeper.
And he gave her like 22 roses. So that's the grounds for a marriage. But
you know,
I think what they're getting at and what you guys are also saying to me is, which I think is something I think should at least be known, is that what the intimacy does is it makes up for attraction is building a house of sticks, right? That can easily get blown down by a bad, bad wolf of divorce. Just walk with me down this path, even though stupid it sounds. But if you have the intimacy, if you have the connection of that intimacy that is even non-sexual, that is how you get your house of bricks. And that's how you're not a toothless hillbilly wondering where your mobile home was blown to with the hurricane that came through. You know what I mean?
You're right. And also a relationship, technically, the things that he lists here, which we will get through, I promise, people who are listening. The things that he lists here, if you have these and no sex, your relationship can still survive. If you have sex and not these, it will not.
Oh, Rachel Wright, dropping some mad knowledge. All right, let's take another break and come back and move on to more of those. All right, we're back. Moving on to the ingredients of a healthy, non-sexual, intimate relationship.
That was only one of five?
That was one of five. Okay. This is what happens. I love chatting with Rachel. She's so good at this. Anyway, go ahead. So enjoying each other's company, which I think you and I crush on this one. This is where I think, Rachel, I take enjoying my wife's company to an almost unhealthy level.
How?
Because I need it. Like, it is a thing where I notice it's not so much, and you'd have to tell me if I'm wrong, it's not so much the time between when we get to have sex that will affect my overall tone of mood, I guess is a better way of saying it, but it is if I don't have time with her.
If it's just sitting at the by the TV, just watching a little show.
I'm okay.
For like 10, 15 minutes.
I'm a lot better if I get to go on a drive and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that is definitely different for me. But in these past, I would say 2 to 3 years is when it's really, truly opened my eyes. I had it as an inkling. I always knew that I was that I needed you in my life, obviously, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the last 2 to 3 years, it's not that something has changed. But I think I'm more aware of it. I became aware of how it affects me, how your ability to jar me out of being in a grumpy
like if
mood.
If you're in a funk, grumpy ass mood, and then I can just talk to you for 15 minutes, or if I can sit next to you or just like rub your back or give you a hug or whatever, then you snap out of it.
Right.
Aww, it's like I love hearing good things. Well, I hear so many negative things all day. It's very nice to hear.
Aww.
Well, I'm
and it's like I told Justin, like he's like, you're the only person that can do that is like touch my back and then just make it all disappear and go away.
Right.
And I'm like, well, the day that I can't do that anymore is the day that I'm terrified. Like,
right.
That'll be a scary day if my voodoo magic of rubbing your back doesn't calm you down. So.
Well, and my favorite part of this whole, this guy's whole post about enjoying each other's company is the last sentence. He says, intimate moments can occur as you spend time together, having fun, talking, and building your relationship, but they do require intentionality to happen.
Yes.
So these things, these moments where you're enjoying each other's company, they're not just going to happen, especially once kids are involved,
yes,
or
exactly
you're running a business together, or you're, you know, whatever. Unless you plan time, this is another thing we talked about on our podcast, was scheduling sex and that concept. But if you plan time to be together, then you'll be together. If you don't, it won't happen. And I'm sure you two can attest to that more than me.
Yeah, what happens when you, for us, and I like that your example of even doing a business together, like what you and Kyle are going through, is that this idea of intentionality is so huge, because when you have kids, it is so easy to fall into the rut of just being two people raising smaller people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you lose that connection with each other.
Yeah.
And this is where I've been unbelievably thankful of having not that my parents weren't a great example, and I'm sure subconsciously they were an even more intense example, but the one that stood up to me consciously was my grandparents. When you were in their presence, you felt the love that they had for each other. And it wasn't even like they were like honeymooners all over each other. But I liken it to kind of what we're talking about, is that you could feel the connection and the intimacy that they had, even though they weren't overly sexual people. I mean, I'm sure they did, but they were grandparents. That's gross. Blah, blah, blah. But my point being is that they let off an aura of love. And the thing that I noticed, it didn't become a big deal for me personally until we had Jack, the second kid. Really felt like there was almost a wedge between us. Mm-hmm. And I learned
that kid was harder.
Right. And two kids is harder than one.
Right. Even though we were a good team, it jostled our world.
We were a good team as far as raising the kids, mm-hmm. but where I think we kind of dropped the ball, and it's easy to drop. It's easy if there's one that's going to drop when you have kids involved, the priority is always going to lean on them. And I'm just throwing this out there, because there are people that have 13-year-old kids that are probably going, yeah, I remember those days. But there are also people listening that are about to have a kid or having a baby and maybe even going through this
or
time.
Or the 13-year-old is what they put their life energy into.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to say that.
So that's just, it's just as relevant.
So point being is that I think, Rachel, you would agree with this, in that you the focus on each other, while it seems a disservice to the kids,
I think
it allows them to build a healthy relationship when they get older. I'm really big on this new thing where they are kids and in our lives for such a small percentage of their overall life. And we put all of the importance on that time. And the reality is that you got to kind of look down the road and say, well, what about when they're 30?
Well,
what am I doing
now?
You.
They're watching your interaction with your loved one on, if you're affectionate, if you're arguing, mm-hmm. they're watching that, they're observing that. That's who they're going to start dating. That's
and so I think it's okay for either one. I think it's okay for either parent, whether you're the dad or the mother, to pull away from the kids. Like, say you're the stereotypical dad who works all day, and you come home and then you want to get around and wrestle with the kids, or the kids are demanding your attention. I truly believe it is very, very healthy for you to give the kids a hug, give them a kiss, say your hellos, and say, okay, I'm going to go talk to mom now. And then let them see you. Let them see you go in there and hug your wife. Kiss her. Uh-huh. Kiss her for longer than just a peck, if that's what you want to do. Oh, 6 seconds?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Easy. And then
kids
leave
the
room. If I'm kissing my wife longer than 6 seconds,
yeah.
I'm going to need a locked door in my situation pretty soon.
Oh, no. 6 seconds is fine. You know, and I love what you guys are saying, too, because kids, like you, Natalie, were saying, kids watch and they learn from what their parents are doing. And honestly, when kids are brought in, the priority list ideally is yourself, your partner, and then your kids.
And people forget
and
that.
I know a lot of people are probably like hearing me say that and like freaking out because, you know, oh my God, no, my kid cannot come third on my priority list. Well, they do, because it's just like when you're on the airplane and the stewardess or flight. Wow, that was very sexually offensive. When the flight attendant,
it's making sense to me.
The flight attendant comes out and is like, you know, if you're traveling with a child, put your mask on first, because if you faint, your kid's fucking screwed.
Exactly. Right.
There is no better way to fix that rut of parental frustration that you're in, where you're like, fuck, I'm just so tired of taking care of other people than a date night or just a time where you just sit and you tell the kids, go in your room, go have fun, give them a craft. I know it seems impossible. Trust me, I've been there. And also, don't overwhelm yourself with the expectation that it has to be even every week. Like, sure, if you could pull that off, I really think that's ideal. But Natalie and I don't pull that off. No. But I don't feel like, I just feel like once both of us kind of realized it and kind of realigned our priorities just a little bit, you see a big change on just a small turn.
Well, and it's important for the kids to have that independence and to have their own time as well.
Yep.
And it creates a conversation where then you can talk about, you know, so there's alone time. There's time you get to play with your brother. You know, there's time that daddy wants alone with one of the kids. Like, we all get different time, and it can create a conversation that can really implement the importance of self-care from a very young age, which is really neat if you think about it. I mean, you're modeling as the adult, you're modeling to your kid what you want for your kid when they're an adult. So if you're not taking care of yourself, they're going to learn how to not take care of themselves.
Right. Exactly. You have to be the hero of your own action movie that they're watching.
Right.
And then when you're 17, 18-year-old goes, you know, graduates from high school and goes to college and leaves you by yourself, now you're with your husband.
Yep.
Well, what kind of relationship do you have now? Do you have that relationship through when, before you had kids, while you had kids, that you maintain that relationship so when they leave the house, you're out partying, going to movies and having dinner? Or like lately, it seems like the majority of parents, once the kids get out of high school and go to college, they don't know what to do with each other. They end up getting divorced.
Because we get small doses of that when they go with someone else.
Then all
weeks.
They're doing is staying together for the kids, which is not the right reason to stay together. And so when kids are out, they're like, peace, out of here, dealt with this bitch as long as I can hack her, you know? Like, I'm going to go get myself a sports car and a 20-year-old.
My diary.
Peace. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But yes.
It's more and
yes,
more.
Yes, I hear you, girl. Oh, my God.
It's more and more.
Get out of my brain.
So, yeah.
It is. It is. It totally is. And if you don't enjoy each other's company, like, why are you together?
Yeah.
Right.
There's probably someone out there you enjoy their company. And if it's more than your partner, you might want to rethink what's going on.
Well, and let's be honest. A lot of people, if they're in this situation and they're listening, it really all comes down to money.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Money. It costs a lot of fucking money to get divorced. And then if you own property, if you have a 401k, if you're in the state of California, if you were the house husband or housewife or house, whatever you want to, you know, be PC and call. Like, if you were unemployed and the other one is employed, you are about to face a shitstorm. So a lot of it is financial, which is sad because then you're stuck in a relationship because of financial obligation. Well, what kind of message is that sending your child?
Yep. Which is why we created Right Wellness Center and are putting out. No, I'm serious, though.
I know.
Literally.
Yeah. That's why I didn't giggle.
That's why we created Right Wellness Center is because we want to be able to teach people these things so that
it
doesn't
accessible.
Come to that.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people, they're scared. They don't know what to do. This is what they've done for so long. This is just easier.
And but it's what their
it's
parents taught them.
It's not fair for themselves and their future and their example to their children.
It's interesting how much you seem to know about this. Are you that little girl?
I work at a bank. So I see these turmoils. People that come in and how, you know, they cheated on this and I just left my husband, or a lady that's trying to save her house and refinance and she's been a housewife for years and can't qualify to pay her ex-husband off and the ex-husband wants the money. Well, now she's homeless.
Yeah,
or vice versa. Like there's an older gentleman right now that's been going through a divorce.
You're such a dick.
You know, like it happens. It's real.
Yeah,
and it's sad.
I forgot that you deal with this all the time.
People get crazy when it comes
but
it's, to
money. Here's the thing. Let's also take a minute before we move on to the next one to touch on this aspect to it is that these are not relationships, I think, in my opinion, that started off unhealthy. It is very easy to start off very in love with each other and very into each other. And then life kind of slowly, that's the thing that becomes so weird about it is that these aren't traumatic events.
It's, right. It's like, how do you go from having babies and being in a hospital and lovey-dovey all over each other and so excited to in a courthouse fighting over a television?
And it's what it is. It's a slow burn that sneaks up on you. that if you look at things like this and don't kind of try to equate them on some level into your own life, you can end up waking up one morning going, oh, fuck.
I'm out. Yeah.
Similar to the dentist or the doctor, if you don't go in for checkups, things can grow and become a lot worse than if you were to go in preventatively. You know, so going to a couples therapist, having some or a couples coach or whatever, having a relationship with someone in this field who you can check in with and have a space, even if it's once a month, that you have 75 minutes with a couples therapist or a couples coach, where you check in on the relationship and you can share what's going on for you. You know, check in on these areas. How are things in the sex department? How are things in the communication department? You know, that preventative care is going to save a lot of money in the long run. And like you said, Natalie, like, it could prevent homelessness. Like, we're talking about some serious consequences.
Bankruptcy. So, like, yeah.
Looking at therapy as more of a preventative thing instead of, oh, shit, now we're fighting. Oh, now we need to go, which is generally how it's viewed. It's like, oh, you're in therapy? Like, oh, what's wrong? What's going on? And honestly, the best time to come in is when nothing's wrong. And so you can build that foundation so that you have the awareness that this would not happen without you realizing it, that you would notice right away if something starts going off.
Yeah, in a moment of extreme irony, my son has just come into the studio and let the dog in.
Stop it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love every minute of it.
Hi, everyone.
Well, he can't hear you. He's dragging the dog out. There he goes. Goodbye, son. I love you. So anyway, yes. This is one I think that both you and I are comfortable with. I think,
it's
honestly,
round number three.
Both parties are themselves. And I think, if I'm going to, for the sake of honesty, I think that I am a little bit more comfortable being completely myself than, say, my wife is. How say you to this, my dear?
Huh?
That I am more comfortable being myself.
No, I heard you. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Don't be rude on my own
fucking
show.
I am myself.
My name is on the logo.
No. I think 80%, what was it? 80% liked me, so I can say that. I don't know what the percentage was. But anyway.
What she's talking about is I did a survey that listeners, which, by the way, please go to the Facebook page for the Dad Podcast. Check it out. And when I asked guests that they like, Natalie got a resounding 88% of people.
Thanks, yeah. People. No, I'm 60, myself.
40, but whatever.
Why would I not be myself? How am I not myself?
I'm saying that you...
I think we just found out my downfall, y'all.
Yeah. No, what it is that you feel like you have to affect yourself a little bit more. Like we've had conversations recently where you feel like you kind of have this need to suck things up or to get past them, even though you're wrestling with them, you know?
No, here's where it comes from. I think it comes from me trying to please everybody.
Yes.
Oh, I have a book saying. For you.
Oh.
I can
call it The Disease to Please.
Natalie doesn't read. Yeah. I'll read it to her.
I should probably read it.
There's an audio version. I don't like to read either.
No, it's not that I'm not myself. I am myself, but I'm thinking of what this person would want, what that person would want, what makes that, like, what's going to, like, how
Rachel,
like
back
that.
Me up on
like,
this one.
The Malibu lunch is a good example.
Part of yourself is that you need to not necessarily. Here's the thing. I know it's a paradox of part of who you are is that you take care of all of us. Right. There's a part of you that feels obligated
in
like every mom in every situation. I'm sure. I don't think dads go through this as much. And I know that sounds wildly sexist, but I do believe it's true. Is that moms in the family dynamic feel pulled in multiple directions.
Yes.
And dads are a little bit more comfortable cutting off strings.
Right. Be like, nope, bitch, I'm going to watch TV. Yeah. Like, go play with your Barbies.
If, you know,
I need 10 minutes. Right. Where moms are like, okay, I'll play Barbies with you.
Yes. They're trying to divide their time equally. And what I'm saying is that yourself, as weird as it sounds to say that, is I do think that is a part of you, but there needs to be a part of you where you do what you want to do. Like going to, like you just said, going to Malibu and having lunch, even though I shit on it.
Yeah, that's hard because then it's you pick your battle. Well, is me going to go do that worth the time or the frustration that it's going to cause the other person?
But see, that's what I'm saying is that by being yourself, like what, and I talked about it in the opening of the show where I said you were going to go to lunch and I accidentally shit on it and ruined it. So now you're here. But my point is that when I say, I don't think it makes sense to me because you asked me what I thought, I don't think I'm actually saying no. I'm not saying don't go. If you want to really look at the subtext of what I'm saying is like, I always want you near me. But I am also an adult enough to go, if that's what you want to go do, then go do it.
Can I therapize
yeah.
you
yeah,
both really quick?
It.
Yeah, therapize it. To yeah.
Okay. So what I find very interesting is that this paragraph, this item number three, both parties are themselves. It's interesting that you both took it the way that you did and went off with it in the exact same way when I did not even take it in the way that you both took it.
Oh.
And it sounds like you had this lunch issue come up and that this was a good way to bring it up and that it needed to be resolved. And so you both found an opening to bring it up and were able to transition instead of having an awkward moment where one of you has to bring it up. It felt like a good transition. But I did not interpret this at all in the same way that you both went with it. So it seemed like there was a little bit of a motive there with the conversation.
So you're saying that this, both parties being themselves, because of a recent experience within my relationship, I Rorschached it and saw something that I wanted to see as opposed
Correct.
To what it means.
Correct.
So I get what it means. What it means is it's saying that you should not feel like you have to affect yourself when you are with this other person. Fair
Correct.
To say? Right.
Or be somebody who you're not.
Right. And so what I'm saying is that I think I'm more comfortable just here's who I am. And I faults and all, even though I try to mend my faults as much as I can. And I try to work with that because I do think that you can't just I don't think you could be an immovable object, which I don't necessarily think this is what it's saying, is that because you do have to have ebb and flow with the person you're with. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying, though, is that I think Natalie is more inclined to create that affect. For instance, this lunch is a situation where you wanted to go to lunch and you said, hey, is that cool? And because I'm so comfortable saying exactly what I think and feel with you, I say, I think it's crazy. But if that's what you want to do, then do it. And because you don't feel comfortable going, well, fuck you, I want to go.
Right, because then in my brain, it's like, okay, well, if that's going to frustrate you and make you angry, then it's not worth it.
Right.
So then
right.
maybe it's
but
not
that's
a good
different.
Idea. So I'm
that's
not
different
go.
Than Natalie not being herself. That's choosing to not do something that is going to – she's choosing to avoid a consequence.
Right, and that's – but what I'm saying is that I don't worry about a consequence.
Right, so what Justin's saying is it would – like he would be okay if I said, well – I know it might sound crazy, but this is what I wanted to do, so this is what I'm going to do.
And then it would be over right. for me.
But then, no.
But that's
but
not
if
you
I
are.
Wanted to go do what I want to do, then it would be, well, you can't always do what you want to do
no,
because
not.
It's not always about you.
No, in that example,
that's, how I see
that's 60% of me letting it go. If you come back a second lap and go, I know it sounds crazy, but I really want to go do this with my mom, I go, well, go fucking nuts. I don't care.
But Natalie, how would you, the way that you asked, that was you being you.
Right.
So you were being yourself.
Yes.
All right. I think we've
in my question.
I think everybody listening agrees that
now.
I'm right and you guys are wrong. I think that's what we learned in this segment here.
We didn't even make it to four.
We could do four real
I
quick.
Might never get to talk to you again, Rachel.
I know.
Well, that's what's great about having Natalie as a co-host. Can't replace her. Being a safe space.
Wouldn't be cheap anyway.
Being a safe space. This is a comfort for your partner. Now, here's the thing. Safe space right now, for me personally, politically becomes kind of a trigger word that I don't like everybody being so hypersensitive. I do think that there is a level of tolerance, obviously, and sensitivity and compassion that you should show your fellow man. But to the level where you have to be accountable for everyone else's feelings at all points
whoa,
in time.
Whoa, 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 that's not what being a safe space means.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not. What I'm saying is safe space is a trigger. So when I first saw this, I'm saying, hold on, what marriage, what implies, what are we saying safe space is? Because I think this is
gotcha.
A buzzword that is not what Dr. Kurt Smith is implying.
Correct.
What is he implying?
He's implying that you should, it's the same thing as I think, being comfortable to be yourself is that you should feel comfortable to say, I really want to go to Malibu with my mom and have lunch, even after I've said, I think you're nuts for going. And then that should be okay. Am I wrong?
So,
I'm wrong again. Fuck.
I don't like saying you're wrong. There's no right or wrong. It's right. just
There's
interpretation.
Just
I'm not a snowflake. You can tell me I'm wrong.
I know you're not a snowflake, but I don't know.
It's the worst show ever.
Wait, but first I want to hear how Natalie interpreted this first before I say anything.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, she didn't really have a chance to peruse it,
peruse.
Okay, good point. Being in a safe space. What do you think being a safe space would mean in a relationship, Natalie? Just based off what I asked you.
Being in a safe space?
Yeah, what do you think if when they're saying this is an ingredient to a healthy relationship?
Kind of like the other day where I was like, okay, I just need to vent. Like, I don't
there
need,
you go.
I don't need
okay,
anybody
continue.
To I don't need I anybody to fix it. I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to listen. And I think that sometimes that happens where, and I know I do this being the man, where
where you want to fix
everything. This is such a stupid show.
I constantly want to fix. Okay, give me a problem. I'm going to attack it. Give me a problem. I'm going to attack it. This is what you need to do. 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 But what I have learned is that some people don't want to fix it. They just want to bitch about it. Which is fine, and that's okay. So, like, the other day, I was really, really frustrated at work, and I'm like, listen, I need to vent. And then I got interrupted by the kids, and then I get interrupted with the dog scratching at the door. And I was about to fucking choke somebody out because I needed to get 10 minutes of conversation out of my mouth to make me go,
you can choke me. I'm into it.
I found my zen. That's a safe place.
That was such a good explanation. Justin, do you remember at the beginning of the show when you had
He's
me vent?
He's shaking his head right now. He's very angry, just so you know.
I'm fine.
Do you remember when you had me vent?
Here's a Kleenex, dear.
Yes, at the beginning of this episode, yeah.
Yeah. So you created a space.
Yeah.
That was creating a space. And when you're in a relationship or a marriage with somebody, it's just important to know that it's safe so that that person can go and say, like Natalie said, like, hey, I just need to vent or I am angry.
Can
and
I give
I'm
you a really good
I need
example?
You to sit here and listen while I scream or I need advice or I need you to hold me while I cry.
Right.
It's knowing that whatever you need, your partner can create that space for you.
And I have a really good example of this because normally I don't like snap and fly off the handle. My father just passed away and we're going through all of his crap. And this is like day two. I'm sitting in the garage at 11:30 at night. We started our day at 8 a.m. I'm exhausted emotionally, physically, right? I have all this crap. I have to weed it all out. And Justin was awesome because he's like, okay, what do you need me to do? Do you need me to get a bin? Do you need me to help you? Do you need me to just walk away and give you a minute? Like he was trying
was
his best
awesome.
To help me.
I think I failed you.
And then at one point I'm just like, I don't know what to do. And just bawling on the floor of the garage. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to go away. And he normally doesn't leave me alone. But in that instant, I needed to be alone. And then he came back and he's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to stop doing this because this is not productive. I'm not getting anything done. So he went to go do something. And then after like 10 minutes, he came back and he was like, okay, we're going to walk away. And that at that point is what I needed. I needed to be in a place where no one was judging me. I could lose my mind. You could still love me. You could still hug
Yes.
me. And then you're going to know what's better for me. And you could swoop me up and take me away and like refocus.
But
me.
In hindsight,
in sometimes when you get there, you can't think for yourself either.
You're painting me in an unfair, not an unfair, in an
did a good job.
Dishonest. Yeah. Fashion. No, hold on. When that first happened, I was not as calm as you made me sound. I was not as judgment-free as you're making me sound. I was, but in retrospect, I did kind of a, you know what? Fuck it. I can't help you. I'm going to go inside and vacuum the house. That's the reality of what happened. And while I was in there, I realized that what I had transmitted or put out there was, fuck you, you're crazy. Yeah. I don't.
Because I was feeling crazy,
no,
too.
No, but you were being crazy. But what I failed in is that what I was honestly feeling was a frustration because I didn't, I care for you in such a way that it affects me. It's why I joke that if you cry, you get whatever you want. It's because I just want you to be happy and not in like a bullshit utopia Stepford Wife way. I'm not I'm not asking
and
for
this
that.
Is something you
but if I can give you something that you want in a non, you know what I mean? Not a trophy wife thing, but if I can help you lead a fulfilled life because in my opinion it is me returning the favor to you that you do for me, and in that situation I did not know because I do not process mourning, I do not process death in the same way, and I do not have the same connection to things that you do. So it was impossible for me to empathize, and I got frustrated with
my inability.
Well,
you could have empathized. It was impossible to sympathize.
My bad.
No. It's okay. I just wanted to.
No, I think you're right.
Those two words get confused a lot.
And I think I am still confusing them. To me, empathize means that I could not relate to it. I can't.
That's sympathizing. So sympathizing is like you've gone through it and you can sympathize with that person because you have experienced it.
I had them backwards. I thought empathize was you could relate.
Empathy is when you've never experienced it, but you can try still, even if you haven't, to think about what it would be like to be in that person's shoes. Right. That's providing empathy. Like that has to be really hard or this looks like it's tough for you. Those are examples of empathy statements.
All right. We got one more thing on this, and then I want to hit on the next article when we come back. All right?
Okay.
All right. So here we go. We're killing this list, man. We're doing great. This is good stuff. I'm loving every minute of it. This is something that I want to put out to you, Miss Rachel, because Natalie and I have done this from time to time, but in an inadvertent way. And fairly recently, we were on a date night, and I don't know how this happened, but I think maybe you might have asked me something, or I think it was probably me, who asked you what you like about me. Like, what is it about me that makes me a good husband or good for you? That kind of thing. And that's what it says, share what you like about one another. And it, what was interesting about this is that this is, I would throw this under what I would easily cast off as a schmaltzy thing, like what I did earlier with the making eye contact. Mm-hmm. But it was a very, very big thing where in marriage, and I would throw into married with kids, becomes an extra element of that. It is very easy to feel like the other person is what I was going to say was taking you for granted, but that's not what I really mean. What I mean is it's easy to feel without value.
Mm-hmm. Unappreciated
and overlooked and
you know what I mean, but not in a victim sense, in a mid-level sense, not a venti but a grande, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not so intense, it's not that dramatic, but it is.
The laundry's done, the dinner's done, and the grocery shopping's done,
the homeostasis
of it, that's just how it is,
the normal feeling of it is actually makes it worse than if it was. Like if it's in a lot of ways, I think it's clearer when somebody's being verbally abusive than when it's just you're living your day-to-day life and not really valuing each other. Does that make sense? Am I getting that
absolutely
out right?
Okay. Well, and this comes back to that intentionality from the beginning and why it's so important to be intentional with your partner. You're not just going to provide and share what you like about one another all the time unless it's an intention, unless you try to do it. We don't do anything without setting out an intention to do it. That's why we have calendars and that's why we have routines. You know, we have to set the intention before we go do something. And so this is actually something that research says, and it's interesting, Justin, that like this came off a little schmaltzy to you. I totally get it. This is actually one of the foundations of what can make or break a relationship.
I believe it, because after that conversation, I told myself it was so eye-opening for me because everything that – I'm not kidding. Natalie and I communicate, I think, very, very well. But because we communicate very well in these little check-ins, I think sometimes we can overlook these kind of deeper things. And literally everything that she told me that she appreciated about me – nailed like 99% of my insecurities of where I thought I could be failing her. And that's why I was like, this is huge. This is a huge thing that I think really for me personally helped out. And so I told myself from now on every anniversary when we are by ourselves, I said, we're going to talk about this. I'm going to make myself, put myself out there and seem like a super needy husband and go, what do you like about me? And make us have this conversation because I do think it helps. And I don't know. The funny part is if Natalie doesn't even remember this conversation. But
I remember.
Okay, good. But I don't.
Well, go ahead. I hope it can happen more than one time a year.
Oh, okay.
This is something that Kyle and I do once a week and that research says is important to do as often as possible. And so that's why I've actually included it in our free family meeting.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the Right Wellness Center family meeting, you tell each other something you appreciated that your partner did in that past week, and then you give them a compliment. And that basically makes sure that this happens. You're again with that intentionality. It's all about that intention and creating the space. Also, at the end of each couple session we do this. So people who see me do this, however, as often as they meet with me.
And for anybody who is, I'm sorry, dear, to interrupt you, but for anybody who is hyper skeptical, like I go at this and like I said, I call it schmaltzy and it's unfair. I'm being unfair to it because of the benefits that can be gained. If for anybody who is really like, this is bullshit, maybe you don't have to sit there and stare deep into each other's eyes and tell each other what you love. But what I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I don't care how skeptical you are, that being slightly aware, like what I said earlier, you move the knob on being slightly aware of these little things, the benefits far outweigh the effort.
Well, and what's interesting about this, too, is you assume, being the guy, you assume that the other person knows how you feel and that they know that you appreciate them because you'll say, thanks for dinner or thanks for going to the grocery store and stuff like that. And I do that. But then Justin's like, well, what the fuck? You know what I mean? So then it falls on me. Do I not say something more that appreciates you? Or do I not say enough to make you feel attractive or to make you feel good? You know what I mean?
It comes down to those love languages.
Right. Well, but the love language, but more like this point, too, is I always appreciate you. Like, I always appreciate everything. I just don't always vocalize it. And I think that happens a lot in relationships.
But when you say, like, it's interesting.
I'm not taking you for granted. You it's say, just I don't vocalize it enough.
You say every time we go out to dinner, you say thank you for dinner, even though it comes from both of our money. And for the majority of our life, it's been 60% your money, 40% mine.
That.
And it's because you appreciate it. But it kind of like, it's kind of flows off my back until I realize that words of affirmation was your love language. That it's that saying those kinds of things is a way that you. But when you say to me, and I think most people, which I think speaks to your example, when you say thanks for going to the grocery store, it seems kind of innocuous. Like that's, you know what I mean? It's I don't.
Well, there's no feeling word involved.
Right.
There's no context.
But
it's like.
But Rachel, you would agree with the idea too, though? But that doesn't take away from the appreciation. It's still there.
Right. Like,
but
it's
easily.
Absolutely.
It's easily deflected or easily just in one
dismissed.
Ear out the other. Yes.
It's dismissed. Well, it's easy. Because it's in my brain, I'm like, thank you for going to the grocery store, .. because I really didn't want to go because I was tired or wanted to be lazy.
Which is why I go.
Which is very nice of you. But
I
don't
very
say
nice. Let's, if nothing else is learned, let us learn I am very nice.
You are, as you
and remember that. As that will be the title of this
episode.
You're
really proving your point there, dear.
Yes.
You sound so nice right now, too.
We're done. Stay frosty, everyone.
He's going to drop the mic in a minute.
Got a boomstick. You were going to say, Rachel, before I rudely interrupted you?
I don't even remember.
All right, my bad. I ruined the show. I want to touch on this article before we leave. And if we are going to do it a disservice, I would be happy to.
Do we have time?
Yeah, really? We have time. We're okay. We're okay
on
time.
Poor listeners.
No, they're not. They like a show that's more than an hour. That's what they said. So here's the thing. Because I find this so interesting, and the more I read into it, but I do think I'm setting this up way too much. Why saying yes might actually be killing your relationship. And this is very interesting to me because I think a lot of people do this. And the example that it uses is, say you're I'm working a lot, right? And I'm very busy. And then I say to Natalie, can you cook dinner for every day this week? Because I'm just slammed at work. And then she says, yes. But in the implication is that this is only going to be a week. And then all of a sudden now she's cooking dinner all the time. And then now she's starting to harbor animosity because now it's past the week or anytime I'm busy, it's just implied that she automatically has to pick up the slack. And I think this kind of passive communication is something that is very prevalent within a lot of marriages. Am I wild on this? Am I crazy? Am I off?
No, you're spot on. I hate this article.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really do. I just actually, I hadn't read it at all. And while you were talking, I was like scanning through it to see what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand what this therapist is trying to get across, but the way that it's written is very confusing. She's trying to say one sentence and turned it into an entire article.
Okay. What's the sentence is the headline?
The sentence is, if you set your boundaries up front, then there's no confusion and resentment later on.
Yeah. See, I'm
that's
glad.
Literally
we relationships aren't about like resentment. You're working together as a team. So you're going to say yes, you're going to say no. But just because you stop saying the word yes, it's not killing your
relationship.
Hold
on. But you and I are very, not very, that's unfair, guilty of this kind of thing. And more so me than you. Like, for instance, where...
you will do that. Where you will say yes, 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 yes. And then you will turn around and go, why do I have to fucking do everything? And right. It's like, well, wait a minute. You said yes, yes, yes. So you are, this is, you've put that on yourself at that point. And if you're right. resenting me, that's on you. You need to say no.
Right.
Yeah. And then I feel guilty if you're like blown up.
Right.
Because I'm like, well, wait a minute. He was okay doing all of this. And this is what he wanted to do. And he chose to do. So I'm thinking everything's good. Everything's fine. This is what he wants to do. But then it's, well, I'm not doing enough.
And if you don't have, if you don't do all of the other things that we discussed in the previous article, then it makes this a, this is a symptom of that.
Right.
Right.
As opposed to a common necessarily occurrence. I think that the things we discussed earlier on in this show can help cure
right.
this kind of
if
situation.
If you are honest and open and are talking to each other, then it doesn't get down to, well, this person's just doing this yes. role. This person's just doing this role. Okay, well, why are you mad now? Because that's what you were doing.
Which is a big part of my thing about letting things, even the little things, go. It's hard for me to comprehend the concept of picking battles, per se. And I have learned that through being married to you. I've learned to, like, kind of go, some things you just have to let slide. Because for me...
Yeah, that saying is... I don't love that saying.
Right. Because for me, it's like, if this is irking me, it's so much better if I go to you and say, this bothers me. And then you could say, you're fucking nuts. That shouldn't bother you. And I'm still okay with that. And I could go, no, I'm not nuts because it bothers
me. Hang on. What you just said is key. And that is a missing element that people don't know in their relationship.
Fucking.
No. God damn it. No. The moment where you said, that's okay. And I don't know if anyone else listening caught on to that. But when you are in a moment where you're like, I want this. And you're like, no, I want that. And when you just said, it's okay to not see the same way and to not want the same thing and still love each other. And like each other and be in a relationship. That is pivotal.
Yes, absolutely. So agreeing
nice,
to disagree.
And I'm very good at what I've learned. Very smart. Very
but you kind of, you mold over that, which is a really important point.
I think that the bigger issue here is totally societal. And specifically in America is that we're not taught how to talk to people in our education.
Ooh.
That we're not taught any of this ever.
Yeah.
Ever. In an ideal world, your two boys right now, part of the curriculum in school is how to communicate your feelings, how to tell people when someone hurt you,
but
how to ask for what
you want. It should be a parent's gig, and maybe that's not
a public school thing. It should be a parent's gig, but that's not happening. And so that's why because of the way parents are parenting right now, you have more
and
more kids that are isolated by themselves, have anxiety, have insecurity.
And Justin, I don't think and the word should I don't like to use either, but I don't think it should be a parent thing because the parents don't have the education. Let the people who have studied for years how to do the things create curriculum and then have the teachers teach the kids.
Yeah, well, here's where I'm coming
from. You know, they learn
from.
About so much history because it's important for history not to repeat itself. I don't remember a fucking thing from, the China War. I don't remember any of that. It would have been so much easier to learn how to write a check.
But you remember somebody picking on you and feeling insecure and not knowing how to handle that. That's what you, and now because it's so much more prevalent, it's becoming more and more awareness with the schools because if parents are nut jobs or can't emotionally connect with your children, then it's trickling over to the schools to have those wellness centers to help their kids through those thoughts of anxiety and depression and thoughts of suicide and all that stuff.
Here's why I said what I said is that I think that for the most part, the expectation before was on the parents. Then it's weird because we look at episodes like Mad Men where kids were dismissed. You know, I think to a certain extent, I joke about being dismissed and my opinions not being valued in my house. But I think that there is a part of that I liked, if that makes sense. I like that style, and that's why I do it with the kids. There is a love that comes across when I tell them neither one of the sides of the car is yours because I pay for the car. And that in that interaction, not only in my opinion, am I diffusing a little bit of the conflict and trying to bring it into perspective for them at their age, but also showing them that a life lesson is that you, when you're paying for stuff, it has a different value. There's a different appreciation. I don't know. I like that dynamic. So what I'm getting at in all of this is that I do think that there was a more of an expectation on parents before, and that now we're getting into this gray area where more and more ends up bleeding onto the public education system.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there is funding or resources that could hold that. But here's where I'm wrong. Where I'm wrong in that my assumption is that my kids don't need, I'm not saying they couldn't benefit. I'm saying that they don't need somebody to tell them how to navigate social situations, because I think you and I do a good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there's
exactly.
That's what my point is. I'm not saying that Rachel sitting down with them isn't going to be far superior to us. Not my point. But I do think that what would happen is, especially if you even made it an elective, in that it gives a kid who comes from a broken home or an unstable home a leg up. It gives them an external influence and some kind of guidance where before there were none, where instead of school becoming this outlet of, or just not an outlet, a place of just, this is where I get, you know, lectured to about math and all of this other stuff that really aren't important to me because I've got bigger fish to fry. I'm just trying to figure out how I can get through the night without getting an ass whooping or somebody getting yelled at or my mom being safe, any of that stuff. Yeah. That are much more important than algebra in any kid's life if they're dealing with that at home.
Yeah.
And if there's a classroom that you can go and just know what it feels like to be in a healthy environment for a little bit and see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that I think that actually gets what both people, I don't care where you land politically, it gives you a target that both people
absolutely
would agree
with. Absolutely. And when I said schools, I wasn't even thinking like in a political manner. All I meant was that we learn it too late.
Yes, yes.
And that's why our divorce rate is so high in this country. You know, you look at other countries like Sweden, especially, who introduces sex ed and relationship education in kindergarten.
Wow.
Their rape statistics and divorce statistics take a big fat shit on us.
Wow. That's incredible.
And it's like the data is there. The data is all over the world. Every other country does it differently than us. Mm-hmm. And we cannot seem to get it together. And, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do, is trying to just help people talk, because it's impossible, especially, oh my God, especially in today's political climate, it's the ability to have a conversation and to recognize that the person's opinion that you're talking to, let's say it's a one-on-one conversation, their opinion does not make your reality or opinion any less valid. Just because you can sit and understand, like Justin, if you and I sat down and let's say you told me that you believed that giraffes were going to rule the world in 2020, right?
Solid.
And I said, actually, I think it's going to be koala bears. And you and I sat down and we were like, okay, let's hash this out. And you give me like a really good description of why giraffes are going to take over in 2020. If I can repeat that back to you, that does not mean that that's my new reality.
No.
I can still believe that koalas are coming, but I now understand why you think giraffes are coming. And so often we don't want to even hear the other person. It's like, no giraffes, koalas. And so if we can create that space and understand that hearing the other person and understanding the other person, it doesn't take away from you. It doesn't take away from what you're going to say or your experience. It's just adding to your experience by understanding how someone else experiences the world.
Yeah, I had a very interesting interaction with somebody who listens to the news and news and talk show that I work on, where I made a comment where I was curious because we were talking about how politically with Trump in office, how everything had become so heated. Everything was intensified. And I made a comment saying, I remember some friends of mine who happened to be gay, and they were incredibly worried about what was going to happen. And it was because they were talking about there was a pro-Trump gay group that wanted to participate in a gay pride parade, and they were ousted because they were pro-Trump. And I just pointed out, I said, well, I'm curious. I said that I'm curious because you would think that their message would be acceptance. While I can understand they don't want that to be the point of the message because it is off topic. That's not the pride that they're necessarily talking about. But I said, but I go, you know, what's funny. I said, I know he's still early in and he's doing a lot of stuff. I said, but I don't think any moves have been made to take away gay rights at this point. And I'm just curious why, because the conversation came up where they said, was this a move for publicity? Like, were they doing this to publicize the event? These Trump supporters, were they doing this to make a name for themselves so they could go do their own event? Or was it honest? And I said, I think it was honest because there hasn't been a lot of movement for Trump to take away gay rights. And then somebody who listened to me say that tweeted me and they said, yeah, but his cabinet members are all anti that. And like the way with that first thought, that message came across super harsh. And I said, my bad. I said, leave it to straight white guy to be ignorant to the issue. I said, but am I at least right on the fact that no action has been taken at this point, even though his cabinet members have been vocal about being anti-gay rights? And they said, yes, absolutely. And I said, oh, OK. And then we had a little, weirdly enough, on all of all places on Twitter, we had a conversation that I thought was very healthy. I later found out this is a lesbian who loves guns, and it was fun. It was, and it all ended where she didn't necessarily feel like she changed my mind politically. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I needed to change hers. She just kind of said, "Hey, just so you know, this is happening."
But you listened.
I listened, and it was like, "Oh, okay." So
and then we move on.
I wasn't necessarily wrong, but also because I'm a guy who cares about gay rights, I should pay attention also to what's going on within the cabinet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm aware of the situation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that about giraffes. You know what I mean?
Right. Or cool.
Exactly. But, well, and I mean, I've learned so much. I've had so many arguments, you know, and Natalie, you know, too. I'm super obviously very liberal in my want of non-censorship in that area specifically. But it's been very interesting lately watching the discussion around what to tell our kids about what's going on in the political world. And what's a little scary is that it's almost like, you know, kids these days, and I'm talking like maybe 9, 10 and up, not little ones, but more aware of what's happening. They have these, you know, glass things in their pockets called phones that have Google on them. So they can go and find out what's going on anytime they want. And yet I still have parents asking me how they can like lie to their kids about what's going on in the political world.
But that's not okay because your kid, you can't lie to your kid because that's more. See,
correct.
Oh my God, you lying to your kid. You're trying to protect them. What are you protecting them from? Because you're not protecting them. You're making it worse. Like, I'll give you a great example. When the LAUSD had a lockdown not long ago and they had a shooter, and we're not in LAUSD, but I was debating, do I send my kid to school or not? And it was scary. And then one of our kids is watching the TV and he wasn't scared until he noticed me getting scared. Right. And then it's like, okay, do I take you to school or do I leave you home? And then I took a deep breath and I'm like, I can't protect you from everything. All I can do is make you aware. So here is your backpack. Here is our phone numbers. Okay, if you get scared, where's the exits at the school? Well, that door's locked. No, but it's not locked from the inside, so you can leave. Yep. Well, the teacher's going to make us go into the classroom. I said, knock the teacher down and run the hell home. And I'm not trying to be a bitch, but it's like, if there are 20 kids going left and my kid knocks a teacher over and runs right, my kid is going to be safe. So you run your ass home. Here's phone numbers at home. Here's how you can get into your home. Here's phone number. So you're empowering them with the information. You don't want them to be fearful, but you want to empower them. And the second that I did that, I looked at his little face and in my heart was like breaking because I'm like, why is it that I have to have this fucking conversation with my 8-year-old? But instead of being angry because I can't control it, I'm going to empower you. And when I looked at his little face and he just like muscled up and he got all confident and straight. And I'm like, okay, buddy, are you okay? And he goes, I'm good, mama. And I'm like, okay. And he went to school and he and pushed was his teacher just down. Fine. Right?
So that is amazing. And so, thank you for sharing
and
that.
And my son even says, like it's hilarious in our house because I'm like, oh, I don't know what that means. And then Jacob will go, well, Google it. Like, of course.
Right.
They're going to have phones and they're going to Google the answer.
Yes.
To be clear, but you and I are not providing cell phones to our 8-year-old. It's my father who gave him an old cell phone that's internet enabled.
But at the end of the day, they know what's going on. So all we can do is be honest and have those conversations. Communicate with them. Don't try to cover them in a bubble and then throw them out in the world because people, oh my gosh, I could go on all day. But I interviewed a director of family service agency here in Burbank, and this is like the exact topic of like students and wellness centers and all these that are popping up left and right. So anyway, but the problem is by living in a bubble and then you are throwing your kid out into the world, they cannot adapt. They don't know how to socially interact. They don't know how to problem solve because their parents are solving all their problems. Their parents are keeping them in a bubble. That struggle, you have to think back. Yes, we want to protect our children, but you have to think back when you were a teenager. Look when you were in high school. Yep. Was anyone protecting you? No. And you became the person you are today because of that. That makes you stronger. It builds character. That struggle, that fight, that, okay, this didn't work, so I have to do it this way. Okay, if I do it this way, I'm going to have consequences and I'm going to get burned or my heart's going to get broken and I'm going to cry. And guess what? That's okay. Because
That's
when it
life.
Comes around and happens again, you're going to be like, shit, nope, that hurt last time. I'm not going to let that happen to me again. And you're going to be more prepared and stronger and more aware. And wrapping it all up, getting me off my soapbox, is just the general awareness in children. They are more aware of what's going on in the news, what's going on in the schools, what's going on in their family. Hi, what's going on at home? So at schools now, they are creating wellness centers, safe places for kids to go to talk about their emotion, to talk about their stresses, to talk about what's going on, to read books, to educate themselves, art therapy, what have you. And you're going to see that more and more often just because it's becoming more and more of an issue. So that awareness of it, that communication is all you can do. But don't lie to your kids. Don't try to hide something. They are not bubble. They are not in a bubble wrap. And if you want them to be 25 years old, independent, can open a bank account, can go get a car on their own, can sign a lease on an apartment and get a rental car, those are life skills, believe it or not, because I cannot tell you how many people I sit across from that are 25 years old, living with their parent. They don't know what to do with their life. They don't know how to fill out an application. They don't know just fundamental skills of basic daily needs and daily living.
And those are the kids that get to college on the first night and overdose and end up in the hospital with alcohol poisoning because their parents said that they had to wait till they're 21 to try alcohol.
Or become super depressed, stop going to school, withdraw because they can do whatever the hell they want to. There's no expectation. There's no parents. Yep. They're not paying for the college. So there's no consequence to their action.
Well, I think I'm not to be super nitpicky about your example, Rachel, but I think you can have a boundary on alcohol legally and still remain connected to your kid and have them have an understand. Like, for instance,
kid is going to drink alcohol their first night in college. So if you don't want them to end up in the ER, they need to know something.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and if you're walking them through, okay, one drink, if you're having that conversation, if you're communicating with them, that doesn't happen. But when you are keeping them in a bubble and then here's the keys to your own place, go nuts.
We got to wrap up, but I think what everybody is all saying is that if you have, just because you have that conversation does not imply that they are going to be an alcoholic or that they are going to all of a sudden become a pothead or a drug addict.
It's actually
contrary. Opposite.
Exactly.
It's the contrary.
That's where we all will agree.
Have the conversation.
Right. Yes.
Save your child.
So
knowledge is power, not the other way around.
Speaking of knowledge being power, why don't you tell us early on in the show, you talked about your multiple webinars that are coming up this week at the rightwellnesscenter.com. Give us a chat. Tell us what's coming up the pipe.
So two really exciting things. And I'm actually so excited about where our conversation went, because this is like exactly what we're trying to do. So we're doing 4 free webinars this week. One is tomorrow on Wednesday. We have 2 on Thursday and 1 on Friday. There are no replays because they're going to be interactive. I'm going to be interacting with the people live on it. So I'm not going to just send out the replay. And the name is 3 Simple Steps for Better Communication in Your Relationship. So I, just like you said, Justin, about ingredients, I broke it down into the simplest way that I could of how to communicate the best way in a relationship. So I'm going to be teaching those simple steps on the webinar. The webinar is totally free, and you can register at rightwellnesscenter.com/webinar. That's all you have to do. And there's 4 times, so come on there live, and it's going to be so fun. I hope one of you can come on one of them, actually. Wait, it'd be fun to have you on.
So that's awesome. So what you're saying is you're doing that webinar 4 times this week.
Correct. Yeah. Oh. So it's the same content 4 times so that anybody who wants to can hopefully attend live and be on there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I would say that if this were like in person, I've seen people charge like $400 or $500 for these types of workshops. And part of why we created Right Wellness is to do a lot of free stuff. And so this is one of our free offerings. And so sign up, take advantage of it. Yeah, and I really want to see you there.
Here's the thing that I would like to encourage our listeners to do, in that you see the free service like Wikipedia, where they're asking you to hit up, you know, $5-$10 and stuff like that. And while Wikipedia is an amazing resource, one of the things I think that's important about making sure that you do be aware of financially supporting the Right Wellness Center. I know Rachel's not asking for this, and she didn't say this to me. This is my opinion. I think why it's important to make sure that you try to find ways to put some ducats in their pockets is because not only are these the kind of people who, because it is their passion, are trying to improve your overall quality of life and or relationship, but they're also kind-hearted people who you, through this show, have, you know, gotten to know. And I think this becomes a very intimate medium where you're listening to it in your ears. And so I think that's another reason why I think you can feel that passion, and you get it through this stuff like this. And that's why they need to be supported so that they can continue, because everybody needs to
eat.
Thank you. Nobody's, let's just say that at this point in the game, Rachel Wright's not flying around in a G6.
Yeah, definitely not.
Copay to your mental health therapist is what, $20, $30?
Exactly.
Yeah, so just think about that.
Yeah.
And I have one other really exciting announcement that's both for Right Wellness and just for listeners of the DAB podcast, because, and for you guys, actually. This is, I didn't even tell you about this, Justin, so I hope it's okay that I throw it on.
I'll edit it out.
So tomorrow we are actually launching our signature program, which is called Revive Your Relationship. And it is 100% written by me based on current research. And I will be introducing it at the very end of the webinar. So if you're on the webinar, you'll hear all about it. But it is basically the first 8 sessions of couples therapy information in an online course for about an eighth of the cost. So I am so excited about it. And for anybody who listens to the DAD podcast, we want to give you an additional ease on it. So we actually created a special promo code, DAD podcast, and you're going to be able to get 30% off of the course.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Justin, Natalie, generous. We would like to give you to the course as a gift for being such wonderful human beings. And I would just love to hear what you thought about it after you take it.
Nice.
It's good stuff. I did, while I will be completely honest, your family meeting, I read through it and I loved it. Schedules did not permit, but this is why I said the point about people who are skeptical earlier is that what I did just by reading it, just the simple act of going through this game plan, and people I think look at this stuff as being very digital, and it's not. It's not on or off. You can have an analog approach to all of this stuff. And there is stuff that I've integrated into where I like the kids being a part of financial decisions. I've talked to them about that in the car. It's not the organized meeting the way you guys wrote it, because Natalie and I at this point in our life have about 45 minutes to an hour each night to sit down. That. But that does not mean I can't integrate it into other parts of the day. And just by being aware of it and being conscientious of it, I can kind of work it in. And it does. It really does help him work out. Not to continue to blow sunshine up Rachel's ass, but I think she deserves it.
No, thank you. The family meeting is free on the homepage of the site. So rightwellnesscenter.com. It's like literally on the homepage. And then for the webinar, it's rightwellnesscenter.com/webinar. And to learn more about Revive Your Relationship, which is the signature program, it's /revive. Yeah, so rightwellnesscenter.com/revive.
All right. All of those links are going to be in the description of this here episode. All right. Well, awesome. Congrats on all your stuff, Rachel. Killing
it.
Thank you
for
everything.
It's like 4 years of work in the making. It's really exciting.
You guys are kicking ass and taking names. Thank you for everything you've done for this show and our listeners. We appreciate the living shit out of you.
Well, I love you guys.
So on behalf of the fantastic Rachel Wright, this is, and my lovely wife, Natalie, my apologies. This is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.